This is an example of speech.
All our history of broiling wars.
Welcome to Tell Me What to Think, a free from oversight and free of charge, thoughtfully improvised, expletive deleted, details expanded, whistle blow hard evergreen topical heatwave of a weekly conversation turned podcast in which we discuss politics, global affairs, current events, music, literature, social media, and anything else that bubbles up from the unmoderated comment section in our brains. We urge you to join us and tell us what you think. You can contact us at tmwttpod@gmail.com. I'm Peter Elbro. You can contact me on Twitter at @bloatednemesis. And I have with me, as always and forever, Charles Minnick, who is on Twitter at @green_weird, which is WYRD. This episode, we have our weekly intro, Week Thoughts, in which we discuss Brazilian politics and the Secretary of State confirmation hearings, a segment in which we have a discussion of what is a neoliberal foreign policy, a discovery of who is running for Paul Ryan's seat, and more. Prepare to get royally revolutionary. This is Tell Me What to Think. Time to get on our soap pod and tell you what to think. Now for some weak thoughts. Okay, welcome to Tell Me What to Think. This is Weak Thoughts. Before we get into the news of our times, I'd like to urge you all to like and subscribe. Whenever I go through this, all the words get jumbled up in my head as to what all the directions I'm supposed to be giving people. Share and comment and rate and review.
Cyberstalk.
We had a review on iTunes, I saw.
Holy cow, what'd they have to say?
That this is their new source of politics, news or whatever. I don't know what exactly it said. It's like, oh, I found... I think they said, oh, I found my favorite new politics podcast.
Sweet.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, fam.
Yep. All right. So, it's one of those weeks where, yeah, everyone's like, oh my god, there's so many things going on.
So many.
So, I would like to start with the...
Are we going to talk about Syria?
The bomb. Yeah, that happened since our last story. Well, we kind of knew it was going to happen last episode, I think. But yeah, so we bombed, what, 3 places in Syria?
Mm-hmm. A scientific installation and apparently a couple of others associated with the holding chemical weapons?
Supposedly, yeah.
Allegedly.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not so much questioning... There is kind of like that, Russian take on things, which is, what chemical weapons? I just somewhat question that we knew that where they were making chemical weapons, when isn't there supposed to be an agreement to not have any?
Yeah, the OPCW apparently inspected that site before and didn't find anything.
Yeah, so it's like all... And then within a week, we know where it is and we bombed it.
Right. I mean, it's... I was listening to the UN Security Council a couple of times over the past week, and a couple of times it was painful to listen to the Syrian ambassador, because kind of right in some of the points that he was making. Like, on Friday, he was having a talk, and he was, like, being super vague. Like, he never actually attributed the attack to anyone, and never, especially to the Syrian government, but he was like, why didn't the Americans, if they knew these were chemical weapon sites, tell the OPCW?
Yeah.
Instead of just bombing it. Yeah, it's... Yeah. It's like, well, you're not wrong.
Yeah. Yeah, I totally agree with that. Yeah, it's... It seems like the response... I mean, I think we talked last week about the illegality of it. I mean, that's still true. But it seems like the response also isn't really going to solve any problem. Like, even the best takes I see on this, which we might get into this in our main segment about neoliberal foreign policy, but the best takes I see on it are like, the most like complimentary to the actions the Americans took, is that, oh, we're sending a message. But it just, it's like, is that really going to help the people we're trying to help? These messages, which we also sent a year ago? Like, almost to the week?
Well, that's the point. They never said they're trying to help people.
Well,
at least you can give them some measure of...
Trump sort of said that.
Yeah.
I mean, he's like, he's a monster who does this to
his own
terrible
people.
Yeah, I mean, implying that we're doing this to stop that.
But we don't do anything else?
Hmm. Yeah.
Like, barrel bombs have killed way more people than chemical weapons.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of like a... I was listening to something about World War II recently where an historian... I mean, by the way, he was justifying using nukes, which I don't really like that historical view of World War II, but that's another show. But he was just saying how, like... I mean, everyone focuses on the nuke as being so terrible, but I think his point was, like, if we had let Curtis LeMay just do whatever he wanted, he would have firebombed that whole country, killing way more people. And... yeah, it's like a really old view of warfare or a questioning of it, which is, why is killing a bunch of people with, quote, traditional weapons okay, and killing less people with, you know, mass destruction weapons, quote-unquote, worse? I don't have a good answer for that.
Yeah, I mean, admittedly, chemical and biological weapons are nasty, but... no more nastier than, like, bombing villages or dropping barrel bombs on residential communities or indiscriminately attacking civilians.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or, like, another historical comparison would be World War I, where the Germans are vilified by history for having used mustard gas. And, like, that did way less magnitudes less damage to soldiers than, like, just the French policy of warfare, frankly.
Yeah.
Like, they lost millions by just running into machine guns. and then, like, the Germans tried something new to end the war. And I don't know, maybe I'm being too I'm ignoring something. I mean, I see what you're saying about being nasty, but isn't, like, gangrene and being shot up pretty nasty?
Yeah, bloody.
I don't know. Maybe it's if, like, the chemical weapons thing went unchecked, it would be worse. It's kind of like a what if? I don't know.
Yeah, there's no comfortable situation behind any of this, so...
yeah, it's war. Yeah.
It's war. It's not supposed to be nice, and it's not supposed to be clean.
Yeah. Oh, I just had one. My main thing with Syria, or our actions surrounding Syria, are, and maybe this is something in a way we could get into the neoliberal foreign policy discussion we'll have, but it's just that regardless of whether or not this is the right thing the international community should do, or whether it's the, like, wrong thing because it's bombing people and diplomacy through cruise missiles and shit like that. To me, because I fucking hate the guy, I don't think anything this president does that involves killing people is legitimate. I don't care how legitimate it would be for another president to do.
Mm-mm.
I just don't buy it. I don't support it, no matter what he does. It maybe means I'm blinded by orange hate or something. I don't know. But
what do you have against people with artificial tans?
But that's just my kind of unnuanced take on it. It's just, I don't think a criminal who lost the popular vote and has multiple investigations going on surrounding his election win
should be undertaking anything of this magnitude.
No, absolutely not.
And so, I will say it's maybe more... If he wouldn't have done it without... I don't know that it justifies it all that much, really, but if he would have done this completely unilaterally, I think it would be worse. Whatever, however bad you think it is, I think that would make it worse.
Right, but at least he has Theresa May and Macron to
yeah,
stand beside him for this.
Yeah, I suppose not the two most like antithetical people to him. So
no. Yeah. As a brief aside, we should also talk about how fucking John Bolton apparently kept this from happening.
Kept what?
Like, last week, Monday, the President Trump was saying, oh, we're going to strike Syria immediately. And then it took a full week for the U.S., France, and Britain to come together. I can only imagine that was because John Bolton wanted to do something that was way worse.
Oh, yeah, weren't there reports, actually, that this was, like, the middle ground between Bolton and Mattis?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
I don't know exactly what Mattis... I haven't heard it, and I might have just missed the report. I haven't heard specifically what this, you know...
I think Mattis' problem was that he didn't want, or from what I've read, is that he didn't want... He worried about Russian retaliation, so he wanted, like, a very limited strike.
Okay, and so that implies... Uh-oh. Bolton wasn't worried about
Russia. Yeah. Bolton is not worried. He sees, more war? Just throw more fuel onto the fire? That guy wants a barrel fire.
Jesus Christ. Yeah, I mean, I suppose on one hand it means that his advice isn't being taken without any sort of criticism within the White House and by the President, but on the other hand it still means he's pretty much as crazy of a mustache as we thought.
Ugh. Thankfully, Mattis is there. I never thought I'd be saying that, but...
Yeah. Yeah. Well, hey, speaking of Bush-era things coming back,
Scooter Libby.
Yeah, Scooter Libby.
Crawled out of a rock.
Can you tell listeners who may have, you know, maybe there's some younger listeners out there who don't remember?
Right, so Scooter Libby was Dick Cheney's chief of staff. And while... There was an investigation of who exactly leaked Valerie Plame's name. They eventually couldn't get past Scooter Libby. Like, he was, like, basically a legal firewall for any further investigation. And so they charged... What was it? Obstruction of justice, I think they got him with?
Yeah.
Like, just one count. And then Bush didn't pardon him, but he vacated the sentence. Which... in hindsight, actually makes Bush look pretty enlightened.
Yeah, I mean, it's... Yeah, I agree.
But now Trump apparently going entirely outside of the pardon process pardoned Scooter Libby. Which, practically, on a practical level, means that he can go back to practicing law.
Oh, that's what that means. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I was kind of wondering, like, why it even... matters beyond, like, kind of political broader strokes. Interesting. Although a bar wouldn't... Would a state bar... Could... Are they not allowed to consider
Yeah, he had a conviction. Well, yeah, he had a conviction, so... You are not allowed to be a lawyer if you're convicted of a felony.
But if it gets...
It was still on his record, but he didn't do any sentence, so... He was still, you know, a felon and couldn't, you know, or be a lawyer. But without that on his record and without the punishment, he can go back to being a member of the bar in good standing.
Interesting. So the kind of, I don't know, mainstream hot take is that Trump is sending a message saying he'll presidentially pardon anyone caught up in the, you know, Mueller and all of these...
Yeah, the special counsel investigations.
And I guess that could be true. I don't really have a reason to think that's not true. But I mean, that would be how I read President Trump's actions in general. And specifically, the case itself was he was convicted of obstruction of justice. You know, you'd reasonably conclude because he was trying to protect people higher up, i.e. Mm-hmm. Cheney or someone else.
David Addington.
And so, you know, I mean, makes sense that he's sending this message. I just think it's really fucking... It's hypocritical and deplorable by this, on the side of...
Well, and also he's trying to get on the right side of the neocons.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, kind of like, no coincidence Bolton's coming in around this time, and...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like, his base is apparently leaving him in droves. Like, the Syrian strike had people burning their MAGA hats.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he campaigned that he would not start, or expand, at least, war in Syria, and Hillary would.
And now he, well, I mean, I guess it was probably one of his last campaign promises to break, but way to go, Trump. And he goes in for the TPP. Huh.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Went back to that, huh?
And the rest of the, of course, the other countries are like, we already negotiated this, so we're not going to do it again for you.
So, I mean, what does that mean? Are we just going to have to, like, are we officially out of it?
Yeah, they pulled us out of all the negotiations. I'm pretty sure they've signed it.
Oh.
Or at least have signed it initially, so... The rest of the countries came to an agreement without America. Imagine that.
So we either have to sign on to what they already did, or just not.
Well, we would have to negotiate. We wouldn't get nearly the deal that we were going to get, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Way to go, Trump. You just threw all of that time, money, and effort down the tube... Just to replicate it again for more cost. I don't know why anybody thinks he's a clever businessman, because this guy has, like, no idea of the costs associated with operations.
Yeah. No, he does. Wasn't that something... wasn't that something reported on him once, is that he has like, no understanding of, balance sheets? And
what?
Like, he just doesn't understand... Kind of, you know, spending. Which makes sense for someone who has run organizations that are continually bankrupt and, you know, the only way it seemingly can make money is by, at least the allegation, but probably money laundering.
Well, and defrauding his contractors.
Yeah. Just continual fraud. I mean, the Trump University, all of that. I mean, he doesn't know how to legally make a successful business.
No.
That's... Yeah. All right. Yeah, I mean, I don't know anything more about Scooter Libby that needs to be said. It just seemed...
He's totally... Yeah. As I said, he's trying to placate or appeal to the neocons.
Yeah, I mean, how much is that even going to... I guess there's kind of some middle-ish, you know, old-school Republicans who, like, you know, still like Bush and stuff around... Like, voters, I'm talking about, around the country... it seems that that's not a way that he could successfully win re-election, pivoting that way.
Hmm. It might keep him out of legal trouble for a minute, though.
Hmm.
I guess that's probably the only valuable strategy behind it.
Maybe, but that boulder might be already moving.
Yeah, so far down the hill that there's no possibility of stopping it.
No matter how many Boltons or Scooter Libbys you put in front of it. All right. You want to talk about Brazilian politics?
Sure.
Tell us what's going on down there?
Well, the most interesting development, besides President Lula going to jail, what was that, last week or the week before?
For what?
He was in. There's the, you know, the big operation, Operation Car Wash, Lava Jato, which is a sprawling corruption investigation. Mm-hmm. As part of it, they found a house which was apparently in his name that he only visited once. They, like, found a video of the oil executive giving him and his wife a tour of it.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it was put in his name apparently, or there's some kind of impropriety about it, and so they tied him into the corruption allegations, and he is now in jail.
Okay.
Which means that he is almost certainly out of the presidential elections scheduled for later this year.
Okay.
He was by far the front runner, far and away. Like, the Brazilian population loves Lula for all the progressive things that he did while he was president. And the people who are running against, who are kind of pushing back against him, are, of course, business owners, capitalists, the people with money and, you know, dedicated institutional interests. But the economic growth that Brazil has been kind of enjoying for the past decade is in no small way attributable to what he advocated.
Okay. So, the race is...
just open now. Yeah. There's no clear left candidate, and the right candidate, called the Trump of Brazil, a senator from Rio de Janeiro named Bolsonaro, is a member of the Army Reserve. He's, in the past, has come out in favor of a military coup. You know, right? You can't get what you want through politics. It's just continue politics by other means.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, the Attorney General just charged him with spewing hate, basically, for his avowedly anti-LGBT statements, his misogyny, his bigotry, which apparently is legally actionable down in Brazil, which is fascinating for other reasons.
Yeah. Seems like it wouldn't be that politically viable to be anti-LGBT from Rio, but maybe.
There are conservative elements in their country just as much as there are here.
I guess. You'd just think that from a bigger city. I don't know. Clearly, I don't really know much about their politics. And so, are there any other... This guy's probably going down.
So, yeah, there's, like, no real candidates with any name recognition in the race right now. Which means Michel Temer is probably going to continue to get exactly what he wants for the foreseeable future.
That's the current president?
Yes, he was the president who was put in after they... I mean, it's not exactly a legal coup, but they implicated a president whose name escapes the tip of my tongue at the moment. She was Lula's handpicked successor, but she got caught up in this and forced from office, and Michel Temer was voted in. He is the least popular politician in the entire world.
Wow.
Like Sisi in Egypt, the guy who rounds up people and tortures them, is somehow more popular than this guy. And his whole political platform has been to pare back the social welfare gains that Lula and his predecessor, Rousseff, there she is, Dilma Rousseff, put in when they were in power. And they also want to vastly scale back the generous pension system that they put into place. I think the retirement age in Brazil is like 55.
Okay.
So, you know, compared to like the United States where it's been increased to like 68.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, it's basically they were trying to make it more valuable, I guess. The workers were getting more money for their work because of their policies. And so, of course, big business is like, we need to pare back all of these pension gains.
Yeah, it sounds like big business.
Yeah. And there's a lot of big corrupt businesses in Brazil, as you might imagine.
Mm-hmm. Do you know when their election is?
Let me double check. I don't want to say the wrong date. I think it's later this year. It is scheduled for the first Sunday in October, which this year falls on October 7th.
Okay, so they're going to be... You'd think by the summer there would be some candidates that would be more prominent, I would...
Yeah, I expect. Assume. Yeah.
It's just a matter of whether or not Jim Comey will be writing letters about them.
Right, and, the most recent, well, I guess more perhaps more disturbing development was the night before Lula was put in jail by the Supreme Court. One of the military leaders was basically saying there can be no impunity before the law. And their highly conservative media was also parroting that, too. So the military was in no small way signaling a coup if they didn't get their way and Lula was put in jail.
If he wasn't put in jail and then won the election.
It might have been if he hadn't gone to jail, they would have done something or been more willing to do something, which is terrible enough.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy to overthrow a government and it's you're doing it. It's not even because of the person necessarily in power. It's interesting.
Let's see. Oh, also, a brief aside. Did you watch the Pompeo hearings at all last week?
No. Yeah, tell us about them.
Oh, my God. That was terrible. For one, you could not have played the drinking game with the word mission during his confirmation hearings. I've watched military hearings, and nobody used the word mission more than that guy did in his confirmation hearings. He kept almost chanting it at times.
Was he using it, like, broadly? Or...
Well, he was using it in, like, a very precise, objective, kind of military-oriented way. Like, I know what the State Department's mission is. It's like, dude, the State Department is not a military organization. It doesn't have missions.
Okay. Yeah.
But yeah, he's an old cavalry officer and most recently head of the CIA, so he is going to apply a very different tact than we've seen historically to the Secretary of State's office.
Yeah, I mean, I guess... I don't know that he so much...
He didn't even...
we haven't really seen a military guy. I mean, we had Colin Powell, but I don't know that he necessarily did the Secretary of State job from a military perspective. Although we did start wars under him, so anyway,
yeah.
Continue.
But Andy didn't really address, which is perhaps even more concerning than his bigotry against people of LGBTQ. And Muslims, is that he didn't address the policy or the personnel issues that are hamstringing our foreign policy right now. What was it like?
Did he dodge those questions, or?
That, I don't even think he was asked about them. Honestly, to my memory, I don't think anybody asked him about it. But like, what, one of the top 10 positions in the State Department is currently filled, like the deputy secretary position, and the rest of them are just empty.
So nutso.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, was it the problem with Tillerson, right, is that he was trying to... on one hand, he was with the White House on just diminishing the workforce there.
He wanted to cut it by, like, half.
But then also a lot of the people he wanted appointed, the White House was refusing to appoint.
For whatever
reason, I guess they just
weren't. Because they weren't ideological.
Oh, I was thinking it was more they just didn't donate to Trump's campaign. I mean, it's probably hard finding diplomats who didn't come out, or not just diplomats, but, you know, that type of person in the world, national security, foreign policy.
Bureaucrat.
And experts and all that, who didn't come out against Trump during 2016. And as far as I understand, he was not going to put anyone in power unless they made a very public about-face.
Right, like his loyalty oath that he says he never asked Comey to make. The State Department has been kind of getting messed with from both sides. They're internally, because as you said, Tillerson was trying to destroy it, and then they weren't getting any support from higher up, which, leads to a terrible situation.
Can't remember which outlet but I read this in, but as soon as Pompeo's, the White House nominated him, I read a story that kind of by no means was praising Pompeo in terms of, like, specific things he's done, but just kind of his ability to run an organization within an administration that doesn't like the organization you run, if that makes sense. So he ran the CIA, he you know, no one was complaining about the CIA not having people there to do the job. You might not like the job that they're doing under the Trump administration, but it wasn't the same types of criticisms the State Department was getting. And so it seems to be because Trump likes him and he knows how to talk to Trump. And so it's kind of like two sides of the same coin, double-edged sword? I don't know what metaphor I'm going for here. But as Secretary of State, it seems like I have a feeling he'll be able to get those positions filled, but we may not like who fills them.
Right, if he doesn't just, like, pare down the department even more.
Well, yeah, but I mean the higher position. I'm guessing he'll fill the higher positions, but it's probably not undo the overall hiring cuts.
Hiring freeze, yeah.
That's just... That's my guess based on what I've seen reported about his relationship with the White House.
Yeah, and he's, like, really, as I said, mission-oriented, so that doesn't bode well for the bureaucracy either.
What? Explain that. Like...
Well, the thing about the State Department bureaucracy is that it may seem incredibly boring, but they just kind of do the same, like, bureaucrats typically do one or two of the same things over and over again. Like, evaluate information, write up policy statements, things like that. And if they're doing, like, these things tailored to specific missions, then that is going to leave a lot of those necessary routine functions undermanned and underaddressed.
Okay. Yeah. Those kind of everyday tasks.
Mm-hmm.
It reminds me of, that explanation reminds me of, post 9/11, when so many of the governments, like law enforcement and intelligence agencies, were directed towards terrorism, and they stopped doing their kind of normal jobs.
Their real job?
Yeah. Remember that
like
came
the
up?
The FBI and their white collar fraud investigations.
Yeah, I mean, that came up in The Wire, where their FBI contact is like, yeah, we're not doing any of this shit anymore. It's all terrorism now.
Yeah, if your name's not Abdul or you're a high public official, we have no interest.
Yeah. I don't know if it was last episode or the week before. It was that really great episode, though. That's what I'm going to call it. We talked about progressive foreign policy. Kind of what would define it in terms of an American... What America would do through, like, international organizations and international justice and courts and the like. And so... I want to get into neoliberal foreign policy because that's, I mean, frankly, there aren't many prominent American politicians that I would say have a progressive foreign policy view, and there's a lot with the neoliberal policy view, and there's a lot with other, you know, neocon or whatever the fuck Trump is, And so, yeah, I just kind of want to, like, get into defining that and how it differentiates from both a more progressive view and then how it differentiates from a more, let's say neocon, because that's kind of the prominent foreign policy of our lifetimes, I would argue.
Yeah, absolutely. We've had, arguably two presidents that have espoused it, so.
And, I mean, at least since we were kids in the Cold War, the post 9/11 neocon foreign policy, I think, had the most far-reaching effects. At least most obvious far-reaching effects. Maybe someone could really get into what was done in the 90s and say, like, well, that led to this and that and the other, but they
it's
didn't...
Tough to yeah, it's tough ahead. To look at Clinton's military policies and see continuity with what Bush did, you know?
Yeah.
Like, Bush came into office, like, saying, we will never do peacekeeping operations, we will never do nation-building, and then proceeded to destroy a couple nations to rebuild them, but whatever, that's another...
Yeah. No, it's, Man, I was just, we're already on a, well, maybe this won't be a tangent. I was listening to a talk with Madeleine Albright, and she, because she has some book about fascism coming out or whatever, and so she's doing the rounds. But anyway, there's a specific thing that was interesting, and it's not so much her view on things, but maybe we can go back to that. Because I would say she's, would you define her as a neoliberal? I would, in terms of foreign policy, I think so.
Sure, yeah. More or less.
And so, anyway, she was talking about her history with North Korea. And she was saying that they were close to having more concrete, you know, nuclear deal or whatever with North Korea late in Clinton's presidency.
Mm-hmm.
And they couldn't really, like, go all, you know, like, finish it because the presidency was about to end and a new team was going to come in. And so they're like, okay, we can't quite do this. Well, you know, you're going to have to talk to the new people. And so I think it was Colin Powell was the first. Yeah, Colin Powell comes in. He really liked what they were doing. So he comes out and he says with publicly, I believe, I would like to keep doing what the Clinton administration was doing with North Korea. And the Bush administration is like, no, 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 no. And according to Madeleine Albright, it was just because it was what the Clinton administration did. It had nothing to do with the merits of the actions themselves.
That's so stupid.
Yeah, and so I think that, like, I don't know. There's it's where, like, the polling and everything really starts fucking with big stuff. Unfortunately. So anyways, how would we define neoliberal foreign policy?
Well, it's they believe strongly in multilateral institutions.
Yes.
Like, especially NATO and the UN and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Which is relatively good.
That would be something that I would say overlaps with progressive foreign policy.
Right, which is why they're both kind of vaguely on the left.
Yeah.
But one of the key differences, I think, is that an American neoliberal policy focuses on maintenance of American hegemony. And, similar to the neocons, sees a vital role for the military in foreign policy.
Yeah.
Which is why, you know, Madeleine Albright, it was joked, I saw a joke on Twitter this weekend, like her favorite foreign policy tactic is a cruise missile.
Yeah, I saw that too. It might be a little harsh, but doesn't mean
they're not really wrong. I mean, Bill Clinton bombed the fuck out of Bosnia and Serbia before sending in troops on the ground.
I guess I would maybe split hairs with the favorite part of it. But I would not disagree with it being a part or a prominent part by any means. Of course not. I mean, definitely not. Has there been, I mean, since we've had cruise missiles, has there been a foreign policy that did not have it as a integral part?
No.
Except when dealing with, like, white Western European countries, I guess.
Yeah, I guess we haven't cruise missiled Gibraltar yet.
Yeah, I mean, Paris wasn't bombed when they were, when the French were against us going into Iraq, so. Okay, yeah, I think that boils down, and so.
Well, and one of the things about the military involvement, too, is that the Treaty of Rome was negotiated and ratified by almost everybody else during the Clinton administration. I mean,
what did the Treaty of Rome do?
That's the International Criminal Court.
Okay.
International Criminal Court. Yeah, it was founded in 1998, like in the middle of Bill Clinton's administration, and the Americans, although we were more friendly to it then than we are now, we even then said we were never going to have any part of this because we cannot abide anybody else bringing our troops and leaders into court to face whatever actions that they may or may not have done.
Yeah. So there's kind of a yeah, like an American exceptionalism where we, because of America being America, we can't abide taking responsibility for our actions. That's the way I would think of it.
Mm-hmm. That's a good way of thinking of it.
Whereas in a progressive foreign policy, we hopefully wouldn't have to take responsibility. But if we did, yeah, there might be...
Yeah, send them to the... I don't see why we're so hesitant to have people charged for the crimes that they commit. And admittedly, war is a dirty and nasty business, but objectively, there are some heinous crimes that people should have to face responsibility for.
Yeah. You know, that... That's a lot like the, like, millennia-long disagreement between governments and the Catholic Church, where the Catholic Church was always, we will discipline our own people, even when they sometimes didn't discipline them, and they just, you know, like, child abuse scandals in America. But they don't let their clergymen be put on... Be under the guise of the laws of a country, like the king's laws 1,000 years ago, or, you know, American law today.
Interesting. Even though they have that whole line about render unto Caesar?
No, I mean, that's, there's a, it's a, I believe his name was Thomas Becket. I'm getting way off topic, but I like this stuff. Thomas Becket was an archbishop. I mean, when is this? Yeah, 1,000 years ago. In England. I can't remember the... It's one of the King Henrys that he... Henry II, it looks like. Yeah, Henry II. There's a great movie about it. And... It was, like, this early example of the Catholic... Like, he was best friends with Henry II, and then they broke apart. They fractured this relationship over the fact that he said, no, our people are not subject to your laws, to the king. And we handle our own laws, because it's... I guess it's like a law of God versus the law of the country. And... Long story short, that just reminds me a lot of American exceptionalism, which is our American laws are greater than the international laws. And that seems like a... that seems like something that's not sustainable if you're going to have an international order.
Right. And that actually brings me to another point of neoliberal foreign policy, is that our laws apply everywhere in the world. That was a doctrine started by the Clinton administration.
Oh, so what does that mean? So, yeah, explain.
So
that.
You can be charged with American laws even if you are overseas.
And you're not American?
It's more for Americans, but if you aren't American... They can technically charge you with crimes, whatever crime that you commit, wherever you and whenever you are.
Okay. And so, go ahead.
Well, that leads to like some pretty dangerous contradictions, like the rendition programs, where people have like been flown across the world and shown up at the FBI's offices in New York to stand trial for what they did.
Hmm.
I think there was, like, what was that? Is that Iron Man 1 or 2?
Don't get me on the MCU. I already was about to talk about it. We might do it next week. But no, what are you referring to in that?
Oh, I'm trying to remember. It was in one of the... it was in Batman, of course, The Dark Knight, where he renders the guy from Hong Kong and deposits him on the step of the Gotham City Police Department.
Oh, yeah.
That kind of shit.
Batman, the neoliberal vigilante.
Totally is a neoliberal vigilante.
Yeah, well, he's... Yeah, Batman's a little dangerous.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, another part about
Go ahead.
I was going to say, another part about neoliberal policy is that in their treaty provisions, they don't necessarily care about the other side. I mean, admittedly, diplomats, and especially national diplomats, should be in some way selfish... in their national interests, but like You could do more things for, like, environmental and labor protections, kind of what they were doing with the TPP, sort of. But, yeah, not as... neoliberals don't really care. They're just trying to get a very strong advantage in their treaty negotiations, especially trade, like NAFTA.
Yeah, it seems like a lot of... I mean, it... I mean, there's definitely... things that have been done by people I think I would call neoliberals who, you know, to advance human rights and stuff. But you're, I think maybe what you're saying is that's kind of like one of the first things to go if there's a conflict between American interest and those kind of human interests.
A lot of the human rights stuff just makes for good PR. That doesn't amount to anything more than people talking in a circle.
Okay, so how would we differentiate this then from kind of classic, let's say, Bush-era foreign policy?
Oh, the realists and the neocons? The neocons have very little use for multilateral institutions. I'm kind of surprised that we're still part of the UN. they don't give even the lip service to human rights that neoliberals do. Like, it doesn't even appear on the agenda.
Okay.
Yeah, other than that, it's kind of comparable and similar. Like, you've got the military primacy, the maintenance of hegemony, the legal immunity for the military. Well, I guess it's impunity for the neocons. Like, and just the military can do whatever it wants, wherever it wants, outside of the United States. Yeah, there is a famous quote by Mueller in The Dark Side, like page 38 or 39, where he's like, I don't give a damn about processes, or there is no process outside of the United States. This is the, yeah.
Meaning his, or like.
Well, just like that Dark Knight thing, where if people just show up in the United States, then he doesn't care how or why. But this was specifically about the extraordinary rendition. Or, you know, they'd kidnap people and send them to a third country, and Mueller was A-okay with that.
Okay. It seems like there would be, none of these may be sort of categorizations, but, you know, there's obviously, within all of these, there would be different individuals have different priorities. But it seems like there'd be a little bit of a different prioritization between the two when it comes to some of these things.
Right, like human rights.
Yeah, so like that might be a little bumped up the list, maybe not at the top, but, you know, for kind of an average neoliberal, whereas, so, like, to me, that American exceptionalism and that use of military is right at the top when it comes to when I think of a classic neocon Bush era, and maybe today, although I think we're still trying to quite figure out what the hell's going on today. So, you know, because I mean, just look at the war in Iraq. I mean, it jumped towards, it wasn't technically unilateral, but I have a feeling we would have done things like we tried to do it. They tried to do the multilateral thing to have other countries help with the what did he call it? The Coalition of the Willing.
Was it 56 countries that signed up to that?
Yeah, but it seemed like that was done just to cover their ass as much as possible. Not so much that was, it wasn't going to stop them if there was just one country.
Yeah, they would have gone in regardless.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, there's not too much delineation. Well, foreign policy is, you know, very studied, but only in the broadest of terms, so... Like, you get the realist, you get the critical school, and then you get, of course, your neolibs and neocons.
So, if I'm looking at it from the perspective of, let's say... I'm a senator. I just got elected.
I have no idea what the hell's going on.
Congratulations, Senator. Here's yes. a check.
And some foreign policy crisis is occurring, and I have not done any homework on foreign policy over, you know, in my previous career as a, let's say, wealthy businessman. And I have, and all told, I'm generally a centrist, let's say. So I have over here, I have some Democratic senators saying one thing, or mostly Democratic. There isn't really anybody
I would say is real progressive in the Senate, because it's an area that hasn't really been studied, and so it's still kind of, shall we say, under development.
Oh yeah, I'm not even talking about progressives. I'm saying there's a group of senators over here that are probably mostly Democrats, although I think there's going to be some... I feel like there's some Republicans that might be more in a neoliberal camp and some Democrats that might be pushing the neocon camp. Mm-hmm. And then over here you have a group that's kind of these neocons. And let's take a test case of Syria here. It's going on now. What's the difference between their two responses? Because I think we're seeing one here a little bit.
I mean, between the neoliberal and neoconservative, not very much of
Well,
I guess the neoliberal push would be to do it in any way. A neoconservative, other than to inflict damage on Syria. In this case, it's kind of like the neocons just go along to get also what they want, in addition to protecting human rights.
Okay.
Because they just wanted to start... They just want to start a war with Syria, or, you know...
Yeah.
Expand their interests, while the neoliberals are like, we have to protect those poor people who are getting attacked by chemical weapons.
Yeah. Process of it, too, is a little different.
Mm-hmm.
Going back to like, that multilateral...
Yeah, the neoliberals... Yeah. Which is why, you know, they had the conversations in the UN Security Council, well, for legal purposes, but...
Yeah.
To appease the neoliberals, basically.
I feel as if... Maybe I'm giving too much credit here. I feel as if 9/11, if that wouldn't have happened, if we wouldn't have had Bush as president and had Iraq War, and I don't know what I'm replacing with, I guess Gore. But saying we didn't have those extraordinary circumstances. So maybe let's just go back to Clinton, like the actions that he took in the 90s. Some of that was through NATO and the UN, but some of it wasn't, right?
Right.
So the things that were through NATO or the UN would be, like, what, Somalia and Yugoslavia?
Yugoslavia, I'm not sure. Was Somalia part of the UN? Yeah, I guess was. Yeah,
Somalia was a UN force there, mm-hmm. In Mogadishu, you know, Black Hawk Down and all that.
And Yugoslavia.
And then Yugoslavia was NATO, I believe.
Yes.
And... So, but things that weren't would be, man, I was just thinking about this the other day, too. When they bombed after the USS Cole, when they bombed, what were they, like?
The medical for the facilities in Sudan and Afghanistan.
Yeah, as a way to get at Al-Qaeda, right?
Yes. Well, Osama bin Laden, yeah.
Or was that even in response to the coal, or was that in response to... Didn't they bomb some of our embassies or something?
Yeah, that was the 98 African embassy bombings that we responded to.
Yeah. And so then he... Do you remember that being a big deal in terms of them bombing a sovereign country?
Yeah.
That's not even discussed, really, anymore.
Mm-mm. No, it's just like, whatever, we have the bombs, and they're underneath them. What is the problem?
Yeah, so it seems like that American exceptionalism that you're talking about being a part of both neoliberal and neocon has been...
vastly expanded, but under neocons, admittedly.
Yeah, and Clinton is the one who did that, true.
Right, he did attack, so...
But it was limited, it was controversial, and that just, after 2001, that just got thrown out, man. That's not even... The idea of another country being sovereign and we can't attack them without a declaration of war from Congress, it's like, it's kind of just brought up as an opposition thing.
Right, that's like a quaint and antiquated notion that fringe politicians and fringe radicals bring up.
Yeah.
Crazy people.
So I guess what I'm saying is, I think in like in a better world that still had shitty people, that type of thing would be more a part. It's like, I guess what I'm saying, it seems like this neoliberal thing has like mutated. What's that called? The
Is that mission creep?
Yeah, what's that called where you have the Barton window or whatever? Did I just totally botch that? You know, where you have the, it's not Barton.
Overton window.
Overton, sorry. Sorry to any Bartons out there. I don't know what I'm implying that you people did. Yeah, the Overton window. It seems like the Overton window for foreign policy has just been, yeah. Like, the fact that we can't even point to any real progressive foreign policy, like, prominent figures.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's such a radical idea. It's so far removed from anything that's happening. We didn't bring it up in the beginning segment, so let's get to it now. Sean Hannity is the mysterious third client of Michael Cohen. So this past week, Trump's lawyers' offices were raided, which, if this is the first time you're hearing it, keep on keeping on, man. But anyway,
I envy your isolation.
Yeah, yes. Yes, how is Mars doing? What interested me more than Sean Hannity being a client, although there's clearly a weird journalistic integrity thing going on, which I'm sure none of Sean Hannity's fans give a shit about, but is that the other client besides Trump and Hannity is Elliot Broidy, he's like a convicted felon. Michael Cohen was negotiating NDAs, non-disclosure agreements, with like impregnated mistresses or something for this guy.
Wait, he was on the Republican Finance Committee, or the yes. RNC's Finance Committee, as a convicted felon?
Yeah, I believe so. I'm pretty sure.
That's really progressive of them.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. Can't vote in Florida, but he can run a national political organization.
He could take any number of donations there.
Yeah. Oddly progressive. That's funny. So he's, deputy chair. And just something that I've seen a little bit of talk about, but just to me it's like this glaring, like, what the hell is going on with Republicans? Is Michael Cohen is also, I believe, on this finance committee, and that guy who resigned a few months ago, I think it was, Steve Wynn.
Yeah, Steve Wynn, yeah.
Was the, pardon me, chairman of it. And, you know, he's a casino magnate, was kind of called
real ladies' man.
Yeah, yes, that's a terrible way of putting it, but yeah, it's caught up in Me Too type stuff. And so anyway, I don't know where that's. It doesn't seem like the Republican leadership has any interest in changing that, seeing as how they did it. I'm guessing. That
I mean, they had to have known, right?
Oh, of course, yeah. Well, yeah. And to me, it's representative of Trump's takeover of the party. And I don't know what that means. Like, is stuff like that maybe sort of, and this will segue into the other thing I want to talk about, which is Paul Ryan. Is that sort of like a kind of unspoken reason Paul Ryan is leaving, and people like that? Because they're all going to be connected to the RNC, and if they all have any sort of morality, they don't really want to be associated with that, I would think.
Right? Is there like a lot more going on at the RNC than people appreciate? I mean, there usually is, but these are some kind of damning scandals to come out in sequence like this.
Yeah. And this is all done. Like, so these people were not running the finances, I believe I'm correct in saying this, in 2016. They were put into that committee last year.
Oh, after Trump took over, huh?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. I believe it was like a year ago and maybe a month or something.
And interesting.
And so, I don't know. I mean, I think we had a previous segment once about the rot at the core of the Republican Party, and that was more ideological. But to people who call themselves conservatives, and maybe even people who are like say Paul Ryan, who's willing to work with the president despite, I mean, I fucking hate Paul Ryan, and I think he's really bad, but I do think he doesn't like Donald Trump.
No Catholic would.
He's just willing to, willing to work with him for what he sees as a greater good. Oh, shudder. I felt a creep up my spine saying that. But I think that's true. But if like, even the financing and the leadership of the party is like this too, that might explain some of this, like, mass exodus, at least in the House. I don't know. Maybe I'm reading too much into things, too.
Well, I mean, all the real Republicans, even, they don't normally care about ideology, but the money stuff, they all should care about. And if all of these money guys are super-duper corrupt, then the Republicans probably have a problem they don't even appreciate, or they do appreciate it, and they are probably panicking on the inside.
Yeah, I mean, what if... What if... This is just hypothetical. What if... So there's all these corrupt people. I think I posed the question to you off the air. Can this many corrupt people get together and not do something corrupt together? And I don't know if that's possible. But
let's like say... Like this is somehow the one part of their lives where they're virtuous?
Yeah. So let's say they are doing something over the past year, some sort of funding-related thing that's corrupt and illegal, and rumors are spreading amongst those people. I don't know. I mean, there could be an FBI investigation open. We wouldn't know about it right now.
No.
Because they don't, you know, as we've all come to know, the policy is to not discuss open investigations.
Sure, but there aren't even journalists even asking it for that no comment line, so...
Yeah, but maybe well, that's true. You'd think they'd be asking about it if the journalists had heard rumors. Well, anyway, all I'm saying is that we don't know really what's going on, but it seems like there's something shady, or kind of a network of something shady, and that, I don't know, that might be why they're leaving. It might be why they're scared to take money. Like, you're not going to keep being a Republican congressman if you're afraid to that the money you're getting is illegal and will get you in trouble.
Yeah, that's a good point.
That's my roundabout way of saying that. If they have any reason to believe that this money is tainted, they're not going to want to take it.
Yeah, right? The appearance of corruption is...
Except for the crazy people like Jim Jordan and Mark Meadows and McCarthy, you know, the real people who are in it through the long haul.
Mm-hmm. Your Jeff Sessions,
the power hungry folk. So anyway, Paul Ryan, Speaker of the House, stepped down.
He said he announced his retirement.
Sorry,
he's still
he
there.
Announced stepping down. Yep, you're right. I think there's a few things of note here. First of all, you know, Kool and the Gang, Celebrate is playing. Celebrate. Not that it'll probably be that great, but I think it's a nice thing. I mean, my entire adult life, he's been the congressman from my home, of my hometown. I'm just genuinely happy. I don't care. It could be the white supremacist that takes his spot. That'll just be a separate thing I'm disappointed about. That doesn't mean I'm not still happy that he's no longer going to be the representative.
Yeah, I mean, how many oil parcels in Oklahoma do you have until you're not really a Wisconsinite?
Well, and he's got to spend most of his time in D.C., right?
Except the weekends.
Do you think he goes home every weekend, though? He might.
I bet he does.
He might. It seems like Speaker of the House would have to be available for some sort of business.
Yeah, like all the fundraising that he's supposed to do, but yeah. Apparently he's so good at it on the week that he doesn't need to be there on the weekend.
He's noted as being... I mean, he's got, like, a war chest, man. You know, coke money. Maybe it doesn't take that much time because you just make hundreds of millions from the cokes. It's just one call a week or something.
Yeah, I suppose.
Go ahead.
He's not really ideological. What makes him such a huge fundraising draw? Is it because he's seen as that kind of quote-unquote policy wonk that, you know, really doesn't believe in anything, apparently?
I think he believes in cutting taxes for the rich.
Well, I guess rich people would love that. So.
And I think that's because he's almost everything you can say about him revolves around that. So the details of his other policy beliefs and things might change, but there's like that center core of that, and I think because they all know that, they're perfectly willing to give him money. Because in the end, that will be his guiding philosophy.
Right. That GOP tax scam was apparently his crowning achievement, so that's that.
So before we get into that, let's just say Randy Bryce, Kathy Myers, should be open for them. So far, no other Republicans besides Paul Nehlen, the anti-Semitic white supremacist.
Is he on the ballot? I know Kathy Myers was still sending volunteers door-to-door to get signatures.
Oh, you're saying maybe Nehlen hasn't gotten enough signatures?
Mm-hmm.
Have you heard when the due date for that is?
It's April 22nd, if memory serves.
Holy shit. So he might just... So wait. To get in signatures?
Mm-hmm.
So they're not going to have another Republican.
They might not, no.
Oh my God.
It could be like we could be looking at a potentially nasty primary in August.
But that would lead to a kind of anticlimactic general.
Yeah. It's like, well, I guess it's Randy Bryce or Kathy Meyer.
Wow.
Yeah.
Huh.
How many white supremacists are there to fill out a ballot or a petition to get on the ballot?
Okay. I just looked up on Ballotpedia, though. I think you're a little wrong, though.
Oh,
filing. It's okay. filing deadline, according to Ballotpedia, is June 1st.
Oh, June. Huh. I thought it was sooner than that.
So, that would give some time. Primary is in August. Generals, obviously November.
Mm-hmm.
There is another Republican listed on Ballotpedia. Nick Polce. Polce. I don't know who this guy is. We'll have to talk about him in a future. He's a business owner, was special forces for 12 years.
Ugh. Why? There is a myth that the political class is indispensable to the governing of this country. I reject this myth. The greatness of this country is not found in Washington. We see American greatness among the 300+ million Americans that live in this magnificent land. The American experiment, I'll just keep reading. The American experiment, creating a society around self-rule, unleashed the individual creativity, problem-solving, and ingenuity, the likes of which the world has never seen before. Oh my God, the English teacher in me is just cringing at that sentence. Yeah, so that's the kind of guy he is. His Facebook page is a nice... Well, the banner is a face shot of him, and it looks like I'm going to bet that's the Racine shoreline behind him.
Wait, which one are you on?
I'm on Nick Polce for Congress.com. Polce, however you say it.
Yeah, I feel like I should know him.
He seems like I like how age. The donation button isn't a donate button, but an invest button.
That's kind of honest, though. You know?
It's honest. Not no less disgusting, but it is honest.
Especially at the higher levels.
Oh, from April 15th to June 1st, we have to collect 1,000 signatures to get on the ballot. I wonder if he has.
Well, this guy, I'm already telling you, he's ahead of Nalen in the polls. That probably...
I mean, that's... whatever.
Yeah, I mean, it's not saying much, but... Okay, so a nameless... Republican in that district beat...
I think he's using the royal we in this sentence, but because we are losing this concept of freedom and individual liberty, we decided to run for office.
Yeah, that's weird.
Man, I think this guy needs a copy editor.
By the way, I'm not... Yeah, I don't know where exactly that is, that picture. We're seeing Shoreline. That looks like a Civil War statue or something behind it. We do have a lot of those in Racine. I'm not entirely sure what park that is, though.
Maybe Kenosha?
Wait. That probably isn't Lake Michigan. Because you see land behind
Follow
it.
Follow the will of the people. My God, this guy's in...
Yeah. Ooh. This is the segment in which we find out about someone new in the Wisconsin 1st District race and are disgusted in the process.
I believe. Let's click on that.
He decided to run for office to remove career politicians. While this may sound like a cliche, well, at least they acknowledge that. They live in Lake Geneva. I think that's Lake Geneva.
Oh, that makes a lot more sense.
Yeah, he's a Lake Geneva guy. Fuck that. Okay, yep, and that's Lake Geneva.
Holy man, okay, so digging into his page, the regulations part is terrible. Too many regulations hurt Americans, our families, our livelihoods, and our way of life. The Federal Register, as of 2016, was over 80,000 pages. Each one of these rules and regulations results in the law...
What? Okay,
each one of these rules and regulations results in the law of unintended consequences.
What?
Congress needs to immediately review each and every regulation and determine the consequences of the regulation. If the regulation causes more harm than good to Americans, we need to eliminate it. Oh my God, that's...
Don't they do that before they...
There's like a whole process and...
Isn't that...
There's, like, some rule writing involved, and, like, you have to get public input. Yeah, it's... This is written by somebody who apparently has very little understanding of government. Maybe I'm misspeaking.
He seems like Paul Ryan with a military background.
Yeah, kind of. I really wish we would stop worshipping people in the military.
Yeah.
They are not necessarily smarter. Just because they chose to serve doesn't make them better or more American than anyone else.
I don't know if that's going to happen anytime soon, Charles. It seems like...
Well, hopefully David Petraeus did his part to break people of that notion.
No. I don't think anyone... I mean, didn't he get away with it partially because of it?
Yeah. Well, I was reading what... Apparently something that came out in the Comey book was that the charges against him were far more egregious than anybody really appreciated, I guess. Because he not only knowingly... knowingly mishandled classified information, but also allowed... his mistress, someone who was writing a book about him, to photograph it in his presence, which is way worse than anything Reality Winner ever did.
Petraeus. What really gets me about that, though, is like he gets like he was. It might be more often. I don't watch it every night, but he was on like. PBS NewsHour a couple months ago is talking about some sort of thing, and it's like, yeah, what do you have to do to not be forgiven? Like, why are you being brought on an expert when you did something really stupid? We can't find someone who didn't do something that stupid?
Right, the head of the CIA doing, like, the one thing that they tell people not to do if they're even around classified information. He gets convicted of it, and then somehow gets back, or is still in everybody's good graces. It's maddening.
Yeah, I guess.
Like, I don't even necessarily agree with the overclassification, but just at least hold up to your own standards.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Is there anything kind of got sidetracked off of this dude running for Congress? Is there anything you wanted to say something about the tax scam going on?
Oh, yeah. The deficit, the CBO, apparently has now increased their projection of the deficit that'll be caused by it, and it's going to be like $2 trillion over the next couple of years. It's gone up $2 trillion total over the in the 10-year time frame, which is going to throw a huge hole in our budget in the next couple of years.
What am I trying to say here? Isn't that to be, I don't know, a little bit? I mean, the Republicans were saying that the original CBO scores would go down once it actually starts taking effect and everything.
Right, because
so this is the exact opposite.
Right, they were being disingenuous then and lying, and now it's coming out. But the initial CBO score apparently didn't consider the interest on the money that would be required, the government would be required to borrow as part of that budget plan.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
At least you have to remember interest.
Mm-hmm. And that's why it's going up so much, because we're going to have to borrow even more money.
Fascinating. Hmm. Fascinating.
Which really makes me think that they were lying through their teeth.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I mean, Paul Ryan, man. I mean, come on, this guy.
Oh, my God. I'm sorry, I'm still reading this guy's webpage.
Go ahead.
This part about the Green Berets, like, you also mentioned it. Nick decided to run for office to remove politicians, and while it may be a cliche, the next sentence is, the right individuals include Green Berets used to operating alone or in small numbers behind enemy lines. Green Berets are force multipliers. Nick will be a force multiplier in Washington.
The fuck?
Right? Oh my God, that is so problematic on its face.
Dude, he needs someone to come. I don't think he... That's implying things way worse than I think he even means. Right?
Maybe not. Who knows?
I don't... So, he's saying because he's a great killer that he should be in Congress.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Anyways, enough with that. I'll close that webpage.
Well, hey, hopefully we don't have to get to know him more, but we might.
Yeah, I mean, he's probably going to be the Republican on the ballot, even though he's only raised a small handful of his apparent fundraising goal.
Well,
a fraction of it.
I mean, Paul Ryan's only been out of the race for a week, so give him time.
Oh, God, we're going to have to delete this whole segment. We talked about him giving him even more coverage.
Well, I think he was going to any... I mean, there's enough Republicans... I mean, shit, Paul Ryan himself probably is going to throw in money any day now, I would assume. Assuming no one else is going to enter the race. Like, it was rumored Reince Priebus, it was rumored Robin...
He rejected that.
Robin Voss
also, yeah. They have no interest in any of that. Yeah. Oh, and, what's his name? Senate? Head of the Wisconsin... Are the Republicans in the Wisconsin Senate, Fitzgerald? Is he in the 1st District?
I don't know. I didn't think so, but I could be wrong.
Yeah, well, it doesn't seem like anybody wants to get in that race because Kathy Meyer and Randy Bryce have such huge visibility and like Randy Bryce has like millions of dollars at his disposal, if memory serves.
Yeah, they. I mean, unless they have a promise from someone like Ryan to throw them some of his funds.
Right, but how do you overcome that enthusiasm gap?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think let's just hit on one more topic, and because I'm interested in your take on it, I saw a report this morning that reportedly North and South Korea are going to sign a peace treaty soon.
That is awesome. Great news. I'm glad that the rest of the world could finally get out of their way. When we finally have a president who is pointedly not going to get involved, things happen. Funny that. But yeah, and
I mean,
Kim is also
it hasn't
said,
been signed yet, though, so still could be some troubles from the other countries, the rest of the world.
Right, but if it's just left to the Koreans themselves, they appear to be able to figure out between them what they want to do. I don't know what's going to happen to Kim and all of that. Obviously, that's going to be some other thorny questions, but hopefully they're already resolving that in whatever way they find to be amicable.
Yeah. But, I mean, when I read this, to me it seemed to be a step towards unification, like you were talking about in previous episodes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They gotta declare peace first, and then they're going to try to unify.
Yeah, and it even said something in the article that part of it is, and it makes sense, of course, if you have a peace treaty, you wouldn't need this, but is to get rid of the demilitarized zone.
Wow, that'd be huge. Hopefully they turn it into a giant national park. Apparently it's pristine.
Oh, I could see
other
that.
Other than the mines.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah. Beautiful deer. Frolic.
Ah.
Yeah, that would take quite an effort, I would think, to get rid of that many mines.
It'll get a lot of people a lot of jobs, and it's something that is very easy to justify spending money on.
How do people cross that? Because some people have crossed that border, right?
Yeah.
Like defectors.
They typically cross at Panmunjom, the treaty city.
And it's not, there's not as many mines or something? Or?
Well, it's all, it's kind of almost a tourist trap for the North Koreans.
Okay.
Yeah, it's like all, they have huge buildings and try to make it as beautiful as possible, and there's only a line at that border. You're not trying to cross, like, a mile of terrain with snipers looking at you from every direction.
Yeah, oof, terrifying. All right, well, it's been a fun episode. We've all learned more than we needed to know about Nick Pulte from
Pulte?
Lake
Harvey
Geneva.
Pinoza?
I don't know. Make sure to like and subscribe and share and
comment and rate and hate.
Taunt us on message boards and
point out our glaring flaws in what we're saying.
Yeah, please, please. Notice our inaccuracies and hyperboles and.
Right, go through the whole thing with a fine-tooth comb.
Yes, treat it as if it's Lord of the Rings or something. or the way I treat the Marvel Cinematic Universe recently.
I'm almost caught up. I think I'm... Well, I've already watched it through. I watched Black Panther when it came out, and I think I'm going to go see it again to, finish out the MCU.
Yeah, I've watched through everything except... I have a couple more to go, but except Incredible Hulk. I didn't rewatch that. I feel as if there was nothing new to be gained from it. Especially because it wasn't really... Like, back in the early... I mean, it was the second movie they did. They did Iron Man, then they did Incredible Hulk. I don't think they quite had the whole unifying theory of the MCU down when they made that movie.
No, not what it was going to be. Well, not what it is now, I guess, certainly.
And even supposedly... In post-production for that movie... They went back and digitally changed, like, some kind of, like, background details to, like, I don't remember the exact examples, but they put, like, maybe Stark Technologies on something sitting in the background somewhere. just to connect it more to the rest of the universe, but that means that they really weren't thinking of that when they actually wrote the script and shot it and acted it and all that.
Yeah, and like the cut scene at the end is, that could have been added real easy afterwards.
Yeah, and I think it was, yeah, with Stark and Thunderbolt Ross. But yeah, otherwise, I mean, I think I've gone through them all and just have a couple more to go before, I think, Avengers 4 comes out next week.
Or the week, yeah, next week.
Yeah, I think it's next week. But yeah, I want to talk about that, like, preview of next episode. I want to talk about, like, the kind of, like, what's the message of all of this, and is there one? Like, not having seen Infinity War, but kind of leading up to what we expect Infinity War to be, which is giant cosmic threat. What's the, like, broader thing? Is there, like, a political, is there a moral message going on here?
I mean, we could talk about the contrast between Captain America and Iron Man all day.
Oh, yeah, Civil War, man. Love that. All right, anyway, that's enough for today. We will see you next week. Thank you all for listening. Destroy the myth that will break our chains. Break your chains!